Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
So empathy is a topic that comes up a lot in our field as coaches, no matter what type of coach you are, whether you're a life coach, a grief coach, positive intelligence, even an athletic coach. It's a term that often, or a word that often gets thrown around and isn't nuanced that much. So we're hoping to take the time today to really nuance the word empathy, maybe by contrasting it with other words like compassion, and then talking about our experiences with positive intelligence. So recently I've been in LaShawn's positive intelligence course and have been learning about empathy as a way to access one's self-love and care for oneself in a way, and doing that through looking at my baby picture, or for someone, a childhood picture. But for me, I was looking at my babyhood picture. And on this assignment, we had to include three different words that describe that picture. And those words then can be things that I think about throughout the day to give myself a little bit more empathy toward myself and others as well, when considering those words and how those relate to, you know, how I showed up into the world and who I am today. So really holding my vision of myself from a place of strength and a place of empathy. And so LaShawn, you've been on both sides of this assignment, one giving the assignment to other people and then also completing the assignment. What are your thoughts about this kind of activity that helps us gain more empathy for ourselves?
I think one of the most important things to keep in mind when we look at this empathy activity, and you did touch on it with the self-love. One of the things that Shehrzad Shamin, the founder of Positive Intelligence, talks about is reminding us who we really are. So I think empathy at its core is that inner knowing that we are beings of light, that we are benevolent. You know, a lot of people might think of the nature of man as being savage or maybe amoral, but this activity requires a belief that we are in fact benevolent, that at our core, we are beings of light, that we are joy and love and innocence. I think that's why Shehrzad decided to have people look at their childhood picture. Because when we think about children, it's really hard to stay mad at them. It's very hard to be too aggressive towards them, because there is an innocence to children, a purity to children. And I think that is what it means to have empathy or to empathize. It's a unguarded, vulnerable state to be in, where you open yourself up to feel what other people are feeling. And I believe that empathy is not just feeling someone's pain, but also sharing in their joy. That's also part of empathy as well. From the side of giving the assignment, it's so exciting to see the people who get the assignment, to see how they interpret it, how they apply it to their lives, and how it changes their perspective of others in their lives, when they're able to apply that perspective of seeing the person as a child or seeing themselves as a child, what that brings up for them. It's always interesting. And being a participant, you know, having done the assignment, even when I do it multiple times or I go back to it, it again reminds me of how hard I can be on myself and how hard I can be on others. Tapping into that empathize power, tapping into that part of myself that is benevolent, really helps me feel lighter about the world, lighter about other people and about myself. Anything coming up for you, Erin?
I would definitely say I feel that lightness from completing this activity more recently and then trying to be more aware of how I use it in my day-to-day with myself and with others. And so I do feel a little bit more buoyant and lighthearted about situations, whether they're related to work or home life or even my own creative outlets. And that's been a big shift, even prior to this exercise. A long part of my history has been a lot of that, like, if I can beat myself up enough, nobody will then be able to hurt me that much either. And so that approach left me depressed and without, really effective strategies and solutions for me to manage my mental health and for me to manage my way of being in the world. And so I like this lens of empathy by looking at our childhood picture to really draw us closer to the root of, like you said, that innocence. And I can't imagine that infant beating themselves up about some work task or something, right? Like that just doesn't make sense. So there is like this cognitive aspect too, to be able to draw that into my life and carry that forward. So that's how it's shown up for me more as I've used the exercise and have found a lot of power through it. And I've really struggled sometimes with the word empathy because I am a sensitive person, and so sometimes I want to take on the feelings of others. And I often say we just need a shield. Some of us need an emotional shield sometimes to be able to empathize well, not take it on completely and get drug under by it, but also to be able to relate on that human level, to be a caring individual, to be a compassionate individual towards that person. So the baby picture is also kind of like a shield in a way and kind of equates to that metaphor as well. And then the other day, I was working with someone and we were talking about the sponge metaphor with empathy and how we can be porous, right? For those people who are deep feelers and very sensitive, right? And they take all of that in and just hold it in. But a sponge has pores and you can squeeze all of that out, right? And still exist as a sponge, right? Or still exist as yourself and as your authentic self without having to be completely taken over by the energy in the room and the feelings that people have and those sorts of things. And I think that's a hard concept for people who don't typically go to empathy or who don't typically have that sensitivity to relate to. I was talking with a friend of mine who goes kind of the other way. Doesn't really tend to consider them very themselves very empathic. And so it's almost like they need to take that sponge metaphor on in a different way. And so that's also come up recently. So all of these things around empathy are just swirling, I guess. And thanks to the course that I'm in right now with you, I'm just more aware of them as well. LaShawn, how's empathy showing up in your life right now?
Well, there's so much that you said that just really resonated with me. How empathy is showing up for me right now is realizing that I've heard about this with caregivers and first responders. And I think they call it compassion fatigue or something like that. And that's showing up for me. And as a positive intelligence coach, and as someone who identifies as a person who's naturally empathetic, I'm realizing that I struggle to find the empathy. Partly it's because maybe it is compassion fatigue. It could also be, I don't know, protective. I don't really know what it is. So how empathy is showing up for me in my life right now is something that I'm learning to reconnect with. And it's showing up in a different way than I'm used to. And so the inner critic, what in positive intelligence we call the judge, is very active, judging me and saying, how could you, a positive intelligence coach, not show empathy for this person? And I'm just trying to shift into a space of curiosity, compassion for myself and compassion for the situation. I have a lot on my plate right now, so it just could be fatigue. And it's new for me. I find it uncomfortable and I'm a little bit ashamed of it too. So that's kind of where empathy is showing up for me. And Erin, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the matter.
Yeah, that fatigue piece that you bring up is so profound in how we can care for others. I know you brought this up in a previous episode, like with the self-care, like taking care of oneself to be able to take care of others. So I can see how that could also be showing up here. And then the other thing, with compassion fatigue, and I like that term. There's vicarious trauma, there's burnout, there's all these different ways people are framing that for people in the helping professions. And it's hard to know what's going on unless we have maybe a little more precise language about it. So that might be a good transition to think about, like, so what is the difference between compassion and empathy? I've always been told that when I can kind of stay in my compassionate lane, I am less likely to get kind of drug under by the deep feelings from the empathic lane that might show up. Not to say that empathy doesn't serve a purpose, because it really helps us understand each other and care for each other and feel things that are very important that we feel, right, as humans. But compassion is more of that. I guess it's a little bit more of an action and a way of caring. And so when I think of fatigue, I often go to like empathy fatigue rather than compassion fatigue. And I don't even know if that term exists, the empathy fatigue thing. But like you said too, you have so much going on and all that you're holding. And so there's other fatigues that are showing up here. So I think another thing that really comes to mind then is just how much energy empathy and or compassion take, right? That is often unseen, and that can often lead to fatigue. And people might be wondering, why are you so tired when you've always been able to do this, or you could do this? And it's like all those things that people are not seeing, the subconscious thinking and the feelings that go into empathy and compassion, and then the acts as well, create even more fatigue. So that's just kind of where I was headed in that kind of vein of trying to uncouple some of the language, and then also kind of interrogate fatigue a little bit more in terms of empathy. What about you, LaShawn?
I really like how you focused on precision of the terms, precision of language. And that's one of the things that I really appreciated from working with you in the grief group that I was in, that you facilitated, where we thought about the terms that was so important to understand what is happening and how I am responding to or how this is affecting me. So I think being precise about what's going on rather than maybe just seeing it as compassion fatigue or empathy fatigue, which I like too, because I think it's more of kind of an empathy fatigue, because there is this idea, my idea is that when you have empathy, it's like your mirror neurons where you see someone's in pain. And although you may not have experienced what's causing their pain, or you may not relate to what's causing their pain, you have felt pain before, you know, in your own way. And I think what, from my perspective, is that there are so many people in my life, professionally and also personally, who are going through some really intense, heavy stuff. And for better or for worse, they come to me. And there's only so much that I can carry. And I'm beginning to understand that, oh, I didn't realize that I was carrying that. Because if I weren't carrying that, this would be new. You know, reset, new person, new thing. But it actually feels more like it's adding on, and there's only so much you can take, right? And then you just start shutting down. Often if I get overwhelmed with something, I get sleepy and I can't keep my eyes open. And I'm like, oh, that's a sign that my mind, my body's like, okay, we're done. Okay, we're not taking anymore. But I see that that's what's happening. And you mentioned that before about being there with someone who's going through something and shielding yourself from taking on that intensity, being there for them, recognizing they're in pain, feeling their pain to a certain extent, but not carrying that pain. And I think that's the difference. I think I'm beginning to understand as we talk, actually, this realization has come over me that I've been carrying other people's stuff. And I didn't know I was carrying it. And I think that's why I'm experiencing this kind of, okay, I'm at capacity. I can't really take anymore. And I kind of shut down. I get detached. And sometimes if it's like in a personal level, I get irritated. And so those are signs that one, I'm not taking care of myself. And two, maybe there's just too much. I'm carrying some of this intense emotional stuff people are going through on all levels in my life. And I know that I also carry with me the fear also that, wow, that person situation, I'm one paycheck away from that. I'm one sick day away from that. I'm one broken down car away from that. So I am also carrying that fear as well that, oh my gosh, you know, am I prepared? Am I ready? Do I have all my ducks in a row? So there's that too. And I don't know, that's kind of maybe a tangent, Erin. I think I'm on a tangent there, but that's kind of the things that are coming up for me as I'm thinking about empathy or compassion fatigue and what I'm experiencing in my own life.
Yeah, that's such an important point to bring up. And I just want to acknowledge all that you are holding. And it is a lot with, you know, your director duties and then this work and the coaching work. And so, yeah, there's a lot there too. And then I also have this image as you were talking about yourself of that childhood picture of yours where you're like lighting up and you are just so full of joy. And ready to take things on, kind of in a way that seemed able to hold them loosely enough, right? So it makes me curious too about that. Like, you know, children don't have the responsibilities that we do, right? They don't have the ex lived experience that we do. So they often don't have as much maybe negativity in certain ways that they're holding. You know, there are cases of abuse and harm and misconduct and so many things, and it's just awful. But for your picture, as I'm picturing that, I'm thinking of how that LaShawn is holding things and holding them kind of a little bit more buoyantly and carefree. So does that bring up anything for you when we talk about your picture in that way?
Yeah, it does, because it does bring up that image of me on that chair with my mouth open, with like, well, how many teeth did I have? I think I had like one or two teeth. My mouth was wide open and my eyes were wide. And I did. I actually looked like a boss. You know, like I was like, hey, give
Yes.
it to me. I'll take it. I don't care. You know, and just like really feeling that joy, that abandon, that feeling, that carefree feeling. And when you were talking about that, I did think about that. Like, what does that feel like to hold things lightly? And I had in my mind that picture that I shared with you of me in that chair with my hands up and just my mouth wide open. And it was like, I'm open in that picture. And I think that's what I would do in this situation is I would bring that back, that openness, because what it feels like right now, how empathy is showing up for me right now is a very closed, guarded, protective feeling. Whereas the little LaShawn in that picture was so carefree and brave, and I'm here, I'm ready, I'll take anything. I don't know. Someone must have said something funny or made a funny face. But I was just completely in the middle of joy, bliss. And when I think about that, and you said hold something lightly, that's what I thought about with the open hands and the open mouth, like just completely free. That's what I thought about when you said that. So that was a gift. So thank you very much. I can take that and really meditate on that because I have an anchor now. So that childhood picture is an anchor for me, and you bringing that up in this situation has lightened it. This definitely, I have a, there's definitely a buoyancy there now. So thank you, Erin.
Yeah, of course. And then also how that LaShawn, that childhood picture, that child is looking at you, right? And they're probably seeing this woman who is so accomplished and smart and, also like full of life. So that's what I would see through her eyes. I'm sure she would see so much more too. So I think just holding that can be helpful for us from that activity with empathy. But it's also like that's one strategy. What else is there for us to navigate our empathic qualities and temper that with self-love and things that really help not only the individuals we're working with thrive, but ourselves thrive too. So I'm like, oh, so empathy as a strategy, is that a thing? Or is it empathy as a way of being? Or is it empathy simply as a way of feeling? And I don't know. I mean, I think empathy is definitely a way of feeling, like you mentioned with the mirror neurons. And I guess if you have an empathic way of being, you kind of embody noticing feelings, maybe. And this was brought up to me about 5 years ago when a woman had mentioned that somebody had to do the feeling in the room. And she was mentioning in terms of like all this like logical thinking and things and typically what's not being seen, like I had mentioned before, is that feeling piece. And somebody's in that room observing how people are feeling by the way that they're talking, by what they're saying. But that role in the room goes completely unnoticed. And yet that role in the room, the person who often takes that on, or takes that on the most, takes that in and then needs an outlet for that to come out in a way. So that is kind of just everything at the top of my mind about empathy. So help me sort that out, LaShawn. Oh boy.
Well, I like the three levels that you talked about. So you talked about empathy as a feeling, empathy as a strategy, empathy as a way of being, correct?
Yes.
And those different layers, I think one thing that really came up for me was a strategy. So, and then what you said about the woman who said someone's got to do the feelings. We've also talked about head and heart as well, and how those things are related. And one thing that comes to mind is that empathy can be learned. A lot of people think that empathy, obviously, it's a capacity that we have as humans. And some of us, as sociopaths and psychopaths, are characterized by their lack of empathy, their inability to empathize. But just like compassion, I think empathy, well, empathy might be the mechanism of compassion, or what allows us to be compassionate, because compassion can be learned. Can empathy be learned? That's another thing that I'm thinking too. And where those two relate, if we're looking at compassion, does empathy come first and then compassion comes from empathy? Or is it a mixture of both? One can practice the art of compassion or the skill of compassion by, and by doing, can work their empathy muscle, so to speak. So those are some things that have come up for me, just like some points of curiosity. Not that I have the answers. I have a lot of questions.
Oh, these are all good questions. And I think that compassion can be an act where empathy comes second. Empathy doesn't always have to be the root of compassion necessarily, because you can observe people doing compassionate acts toward others and do those just as from a cognitive perspective, maybe, or just from a logical perspective. And I think empathy has to involve feelings. So I think that might be a little bit of the difference. And I think you are 100% right that empathy can be learned. A lot of people grow up in spaces where empathy is not very present. And so that gets learned over a lifetime in therapy or in coaching or in just day-to-day experiences, and that just grows. And some people may grow up in highly empathic homes and not have, worked on their own empathy either. So it can go so many ways where empathy is maybe not showing up into adulthood, but I think it can be taught because it's those things, right? It's a way of being, it's your feelings, it's strategies. You can teach those things. So that's where I kind of start to think of the two. I have been told that I tend to be more compassionate than empathetic. Like I tend to go to compassion and then go back to empathy sometimes. So I am interested in like, why is it that I do that? Because I've never asked myself that question really and really interrogated that piece very much. And, you know, how do I grow my empathy rate as my compassionate piece? Which also leads me to another question I have about empathy. Some people are very sensitive, and you know, I was always told as a kid I was too sensitive or very sensitive. So people who are highly feeling, highly affected people, I wonder, are they always the most empathic or not? Maybe they're not. I don't know. Like there's so much there, and you just got my brain spinning a little bit more with more questions. So I'll boot it back to you on that to keep the conversation going on how these terms show up.
Well, I'm really curious to know if you got any more specific feedback about what people mean when they say you're more compassionate than empathetic. Because one thing that came to mind, like a question, was so how, what does that look like? Okay, so, and then the other thing was, can we define compassion? So for me, compassion is that feeling, another person's feeling, or seeing that someone is suffering and wanting to end that suffering. So, Erin, is that how you see compassion? Is there
Yes,
action in
definitely.
there?
Compassion is definitely an act. Like it's showing that you acknowledge whether it's suffering or like you'd mentioned earlier, even the joy or the emotional state and the outward state, the actions, you can acknowledge it all. You do that through compassion. And I don't know why. I think it's because my whole job, like they give you this placard of like the key words that describe you, and compassion was one of the biggest on the word cloud for me. And I never really sat with that enough to ask more about like why compassion versus empathy a little bit more. I'm just now starting to really think about that. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny because I believe the opposite. I see in you empathy and compassion. So you have a wonderful ability to tap into the heart of the matter. And I want to go back to when I shared that experience I had when I was younger, where I got attached to a teacher volunteer at the preschool that I went to, but I wasn't in preschool at the time. I was volunteering it myself. And I got attached to one of the teachers. And we already talked about this with the, I can't remember what it was, values. And you were able, just from that story, something I didn't even see, you were able to see my sensitivity. And that to me is a sign of empathy. That is not a sign of compassion. That is a sign of empathy. And where your compassion shows up is you offer suggestions for ways that a person can move out of that suffering, or you ask questions as any coach would do. So that's where I see those aspects of you. I think they're equally there, but I would say that your empathy is very high. Just from what I've seen in the way that you interact with others, the way that you can really see the feeling piece of so many things that we talk about that I haven't seen in other people. So I would say that from my perspective, as I cannot talk for other people or speak for other people, but from my perspective, I have observed high levels of empathy in you, very acute. You see things that I don't see, even in myself. So that would be my
Just like you
commentary
did
on
in
that.
me.
I was just curious about that. Maybe they're intertwined in you. They're so closely knit together that one cannot differentiate between compassion and empathy. Although your compassion shows up, I would say your empathy is more subtle and your compassion is much more obvious. But when
That's a
your
good point.
empathy shows up, it's just like spot on almost all the time. And it's one of the things I admire about
Oh,
you, is your empathy is
I really
really,
appreciate that.
yeah, very in tune to the feeling piece of things.
Thank you. And
So,
that was really helpful to nuance the empathy showing up maybe a little more subtly. And that's why compassion kind of comes out a little bit more forwardly. And I guess with compassion being more of an act, I could see how that would make sense. And I never connected the dots that way. So that was a brilliant coaching moment, I feel like, on your side, being able to really deeply listen to what I was saying and then be able to piece together how that's related to other aspects of my life, other things that I've said. So, very skilled coaching moment there, I would say, on your part. And then that's the other piece. I think good coaches have empathy and compassion. I mean, you're in the human facing world, you're in the human helping world. So I think that everybody I've encountered in the coach space holds this just strong belief that that person sitting across from them is amazing. They can, if they're wanting to, do more than what they're currently doing, they can be more than what they're currently being, and they can just be too, right? But I think that that's also another key point to being an effective coach is holding the empathy and compassion for others. And so that takes us back to where we started and holding it for ourselves. Because sometimes those that hold empathy and compassion for others might have the hardest time holding it for themselves. And how do we navigate that as caretakers and leaders in the community? And thinking about your role too, LaShawn, and as you know, your director level role as a leader, like how you navigate that self-compassion in that space too.
Yeah. One thing that I thought of when you said that apply to the self is what you said at the beginning of our episode, where you mentioned that you couldn't see the infant you beating yourself up for, whatever reason. And I think going back to looking at ourselves as a child helps us feel more compassion for ourselves because it brings us back to that time in our lives when such a thing as, negative self-talk or beating ourselves up for, not doing something the way that we wanted it to be done or beating ourselves up because we're disappointed. That just wasn't a thing when we were children. When we were children, we were exploring the world, we were enjoying the little things. We weren't really self-examining, So when we go back to that, when we can look at ourselves as children, I think it's a great way to practice self-empathy. And just to remind ourselves that we are deserving of grace and that we are doing the best that we can with the tools that we have. And, it's And what you said before about holding things lightly, I think that would really go a long way to just being kinder to ourselves. Any thoughts, Erin? I think we're really close to the coaching nugget.
Okay. Maybe as you were talking about your childhood and that carefreeness, or being a child and having the carefree quality, it reminded me of also kind of the used phrase, we're a work in progress. And so that can also bring us more empathy when we think of ourselves that way. So maybe we can also think of ourselves as in school again, even though a lot of people may have a very adverse reaction to that, but we're at the level that we're supposed to be with the tools, like you said, with the tools and crayons or protractors or calculators, whatever, with where we're supposed to be. And we're learning and we're learning. And then, it kind of takes the pressure off in a way of saying, well, you have to be at this specific level. It's like, no, this is a level that I'm at right now, as a human. And, I want to have progress moving forward. And so one of the most important ways for me to do that is to have empathy and kind of try to reduce the inner critic and that judge voice in my space. So that's my coaching nugget of wisdom. Pretend this is just the grade you're in right now with your tools and your level, and you're going to level up at some point. But do that with empathy and compassion toward yourself.
That's great. I love that, the school of life. You're just in this grade. I would add to that, because this was so powerful for me in that very powerful coaching moment that you had, Erin, when you mentioned what the baby me would think of my current situation. And what I would say is, if anything that I said about empathy fatigue or compassion fatigue resonates with you, I would say maybe try to find an anchor. It doesn't have to be your childhood self. It could be something that, gives you your why. If you're a caretaker, if you're a teacher, if you're somebody who is interacting with the public, who's interacting with people on their good days, their bad days, and everything in between, and you're experiencing compassion or empathy fatigue, consider giving yourself an anchor. Something that you can latch on to that's practical, that not practical, but that's tangible, that's something you can see, something that you can connect to feelings of empathy and compassion, and see how that works if you are also experiencing compassion or empathy fatigue. Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Meychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.